the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Emergency podcast, the world's greatest podcast. And we have actually a new listener, Amelia Allen Rash. I am a grandfather officially, Al Rash. Mom is doing well. And so we have a new visitor, but a new listener.
Hold on. Congratulations. Holy cow. You and Karen, are you kidding me? It's a huge day, man. I'm looking at you right now, and I can see your eyes. Your eyes are a little misty right now, and they should be. Man, the Greenberg girls are the absolute best. Congratulations to Ella, you, Karen. I don't know her husband's name, but congratulations to him. Oh, what a day, big boy. What a day.
Andrew Rash is his name, and basically he's been known as the freeloader since he's been dated Ella since his freshman year of college.
I was at a family dinner where the freeloader was discussed, and all in good fun. Better be nice to him now, man. Great job. Congratulations, man. I'm so happy for you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's exciting. Good stuff. And college basketball's back. 11/25 will be our first games. 27 games max, 13 games minimum. No scrimmages, no exhibitions, which is going to impact, obviously, mid-majors, low-majors. There's going to be a lot of moving parts in the next few weeks. But as you just said, Dan, 76% of schools will be out of school when these games begin. Quick thoughts before we bring in our first guest, Andy Katz.
Really happy that we're going to have hoops. The 76% is big because it'll create its own bubble, as you have been talking about. So, you know, look, I don't know how this is going to go. Nobody knows how this is going to go. Like all these other leagues, coaches have to be talking to their players about safety, social distancing, wearing masks, being smart. Let's see how it goes. But my gosh, it's great to have finally a start date. And kudos to Dan Gavitt, who spearheaded all of this, took the lead, and they got something done. Seth, what are your thoughts?
Dan Gavitt's incredible. I think the three P's I started with: patience, multiple plans, and protocol. He followed that lead. The NCAA followed that game plan, in essence. They didn't jump to conclusions. They didn't overreact. They took in all the information. They had multiple plans, multiple potential dates. They came up with a date that they felt fit the best. They're going to have a protocol in place, obviously, for all games and events. And each event will probably have protocol in place. And so when you have patience, you have a plan, and you have protocol, we have basketball back. And, you know, there'll be roadblocks and detours. That's just the way it is during the course of the pandemic. But I think that the patience that Dan Gavitt has shown is the reason we have a starting date.
Smart by Dan Gavitt. Take your time. As you know, and the world knows, a lot can happen between now and then. But let's go inside. The players have to be excited because now there's a date. Coaches have got to get to work, got to come up with a schedule. Got to come up with – leagues have to come up with schedules, whether it's a pod system, whatever. But you know what? I would say going back maybe midsummer, early summer, the thought of college basketball was off the radar. Nobody was thinking about it, football. But the way things transpired – and I do think this. I think the Big Ten with football coming back is important as well. So in having basketball. So guys that know took time. Guys that know got their stuff together. People that don't know on the outside, hemmed and hawed, whatever, but they really don't matter. The people that matter are Dan Gavitt, the people at all these different leagues. They feel safe, so let's go.
I'm with you. And you know what? We have a guy that spoke with Dan Gavitt yesterday. Andy Katz will be joining us to discuss exactly what he learned from Dan and how we are moving forward. And I spoke to Kevin Keats earlier this morning. He said right now he is starting working on his schedule again, because he's got to start from scratch with the 27 games. If they have an exempt event, can all those teams get to the exempt event? We've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. We've got Andy coming on, which I think is going to be terrific. And then we've got Clint Overby, who's the vice president of events for ESPN, coming on. He's the guy that actually executes the events. We'll give us some insight what's going on in his world. So let's welcome in my good friend, the voice of NCAA March Madness, the voice of Fox college basketball as a reporter, the voice of the Big Ten, college basketball as a reporter and an analyst. We're all in trouble. The great Andy Katz. So we'd like to welcome in the great Andy Katz, my former podcast partner, an all-time good human being and a guru, but a good guru. Because we don't invite just any guru in, right, Dan? We
only No, you got to be a special type of guru.
So, Andy Katz, you've been talking to Dan Gavitt, who's basically been behind the patience and the protocols and the plans for bringing college basketball back. In a nutshell, which is very difficult for you because we know you're long-winded. In a nutshell, how did this happen? And break it down where we are right now.
So, unlike college football, not to slam it, but I will sort of passively here, there was consensus, uniformity, and really stakeholders, key word here, from various parts of the game were involved, including players. The NABC had created this student advisory council with some big name guys, Josh Langford from Michigan State, Corey Kispert from Gonzaga, Keon Brooks from Kentucky, Wendell Moore from Duke, just to name a few. And they made it clear, for example, they wanted to play non-conference. And that is a strong recommendation. That's the only thing that's not mandated here in what the D1 council did, because they can't really tell you you have to play non-conference, but it's strongly worded that you should. And they want to have as much of a legitimate season as possible. And they also talked to the coaches about making sure that there was enough practice and lead in. And what we're seeing, obviously, with the adjusted practice times, it'll start with getting more hours beginning on Monday, this coming Monday. And then the official team practice on October 14th for two older coaches like yourselves. I don't mean old in age, but old in terms of you guys were coaches quite a while ago. You know, this goes back to sort of what it used to be, which was around the 14th or 15th. And that's when official team practice will start. And I always believed in talking to Dan and other people that we're going to settle on Thanksgiving week. In large part, I don't know, say just for the optics, but I knew that because the majority of universities, if there are kids on campus, and if there are any in-person learning, pretty much everyone's gone Thanksgiving week and they're not coming back. I can't tell you it's 100%, but it's pretty high number. And then if there are still final exams, they're in December. And the schools just didn't want to start, even though there will be football, but they didn't want to start a sport in those final 2 weeks while students are still on campus and, you know, trying to get through to Thanksgiving, you know, as much as they can. They wanted to start it sort of clean slate Thanksgiving week and go forward and use that 5 week period or more, when the campuses are going to be relatively empty.
October 15th was a national holiday in my life from the time I was in high school until got done playing. So the 14th is great. Andy, how do you see scheduling? How do you see games being played? Pods? What are you seeing here?
So here's what we know, Dan. All the ESPN events, this is not officially announced, but we know this is going to happen. They're going to be in Orlando. And so they're going to coalesce all their events, what their dates are. Are they going to mix and match tournaments? We still don't know that. But for the most part, all the ESPN events that they own are going to be in Orlando. The Gazelle Group and the Hall of Fame, I think there's four tournaments there, they're going to move to the Mohegan Sun. Maui is going to go to either Indy or Asheville. The Battle for Atlantis is going to be in South Dakota. And then they're going to be sort of other events that are looking for new homes, Paradise Jam, all these other ones that are sort of independently operated. And what they're trying to create, I don't know if we should use the term bubble or pod, but sort of mini pods, if you will, for, you know, a week or whatever the date's going to be, so that you go to one place, you have your testing set up at that one site, you stay in one hotel, and it's a controlled environment, and you get as many games as you can out of that. It also will help, Dan, with officials. That's been something that has not been discussed as much lately. But as we know, all it takes is one person, and they just don't want officials flying all over the place, you know, in November to go to all these games. And so that allows the officials to be in one spot as well. I also think what we're going to see is the creation of sort of even mini pods around some of the big single games. So for example, one thing that Kentucky's looking at is to get that Louisville Kentucky game in, maybe you bring in Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, Murray State, and a couple other regional teams around that game. You all play each other. They get their game against Kentucky and Louisville, and then Louisville plays Kentucky. What I don't think we will see in the non-conference is I don't think we'll see the one-off, you know, Toledo at Ohio State. I think all these non-conference games will be collected into one event, whether it's a tournament or not, at one site, even if that's a home site, but just not just one singular game, at least in the late November, December period.
Andy, but here's the problem. You're going to get these big major teams that obviously have contracts that are going to be void of money, which is number one. Number two, you don't have to schedule that many games. Because let's look at this. If you're playing an MTE, you can play three games. Most leagues are playing 20 league games, so that gets you to 23. If the ACC Big Ten Challenge goes into some type of pod, all right, like just using those two conferences, there's 24. That leaves you three games to get. You know,
I mean, yeah, you're right, Seth.
You don't have to play 27.
And so that's why I think these events are going to happen, you know, from November 25th to whatever that date's going to be, December 10th. And then I think these leagues are going to start their league season. And going back, Dan, to what, like you were saying about October 15th, I think we're going to go back to the way it used to be for the most part, which is non-conference, conference. And then when you're in your league, that's what you're doing. And I do think there's going to be an encouragement to start the league as soon as possible because you may have disruption. The other disruption that may happen, and something we talked about with Dan on Thursday morning, and will be posted on Friday night on the NCAA Twitter channel, is that or Twitter feed, is they did discuss about the Christmas break and the mandatory 3 days off and whether or not that's a good idea to send kids home or not. And in talking to the players and their medical advisory board, they thought, you know what, for the mental health aspect, we should allow that. And so you may have to build in on the back end of that a little gap because just in case, you know, if someone comes back positive, they got a quarantine or what have you. So I think the season may need to be spread out a little bit, you know, the conference season. So starting it earlier certainly would help.
What about testing protocols? Did they build in any testing protocols for these events?
Well, the event testing protocols, you know, those are going to be up to the event. But there's going to be, the advisory board has suggested, you know, much like they did with football, is a certain standard of testing, which is, you know, it has been 72 hours before an event, but the assumption, and Dan and I talked about this, and we just saw this with Big Ten football, the assumption is that by the time we get to November 25th, we will have point of care testing that is daily, rapid testing daily. Now, we don't have that now. Widespread. But it's mid-September and we've got 2+ months, but that is the anticipation. And if things change and we don't have it, then yeah, they're going to have to adjust. But that's the hope is that because basketball has the benefit of time and, you know, science and all that to sort of catch up here, the anticipation is that we'll have much better testing on a daily basis to pull off these events.
Hey, Andy, I don't necessarily know that you'll have this information, but I was asked this yesterday, and I didn't really have the answer. You mentioned football a number of times. Football games have been played. There have been a few fans in the stands. Has there been any coronavirus repercussions from playing the games, actually playing the games and from actually having fans in? And was that any part of Dan Gavitt's thought?
No, there has not. And you know, yes, the bubble is working with the NBA and the WNBA. But that was a key point, was that the game of basketball is being played without any positive tests. And while they are being tested before, but no one is getting it from actually playing the sport. And so that's critical. And from what we're seeing so far in football, that's the same that's happening. The actual playing of the sport is not the issue. You know, both of you are coaches, and I still think that the main issue is going to still be, what are you doing when you're not in the, you know, as Seth, you've told me many times, control the controllables. And you can't control what a lot of players are doing you know, in those other hours. And so I've talked to countless players from March on, and they all say the right thing, that this is going to be different and we got to look out for each other and we can't go to parties. You know, now we're seeing universities really crack down on all that on and off campus and suspending people and all. And so, you know, they're, you know, awake to that, but it really is going to take some discipline from, you know, the actual players to just treat this year differently and where they are and know who they're with and hope that they're with people that are taking the same precautions.
But there's been, you know, Marshall played football. I don't know. Navy's played. There's been no impact. There's been no, you know, negative, you know, blowback or negative testing from guys playing the sport, right?
No, everything's happened outside of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and the other big elephant in the room, and this is hopefully, this is out of all of our control. It's more of a CDC thing is, and we just saw this. I just saw this before we started talking, you know, for example, so Charlotte football team canceled its game against North Carolina because its whole offensive line is out, not due to positive tests, but due to contact tracing.
Yeah.
And that's the elephant in the room here, because that's going to have to come down, because you could have, you know, your starting five who was with, you know, one individual who's not even on the team. And you know, maybe they're with them for an hour or whatever the time frame is. And because of contact tracing, they would have to sit for 14 days. That is going to be the real big disruptor that has to be
scheduling correct. Of schools in different states, Andy. Like, so like, say, you know, to come into Connecticut, if you're coming from certain states, you have to quarantine for 14 days. How are they going to handle that when you're crossing state lines and different states have different protocols in terms of quarantine coming from state to state?
So another really good question that there's not an answer yet. We know this is changing weekly. Every state is different in terms of the number of states that they put on their sort of their bad list. So a good example is, you know, Purdue in the state of Indiana near Dan. Right now, Indiana is on the bad list for Connecticut. Purdue is in the event that would be at the Mohegan Sun. So if this were happening tomorrow, you know, Purdue wouldn't be allowed to come unless they had a negative test for everyone within 72 hours. Now, they obviously could get that, but you'd need a rapid test or the test that they would want readily available. But on the flip side of that, the question that I think needs to be answered is, clearly in Major League Baseball and in the NFL, two sports that are hosting at home sites, so the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Mets here in the Northeast, you know, these teams are coming in from hot spots. The Patriots just hosted the Miami Dolphins. Florida, you know, if you were a regular person coming from Florida to Massachusetts, you'd have to quarantine. But the Dolphins were allowed to come up to play the Patriots. So clearly there are exemptions for professional athletes who are being tested all the time. So there needs to be coordination with college athletes and going with the states, the governors, their medical advisory boards. Okay, what hurdle do we need to clear to make sure that college athletes can get the same exemption that professional athletes are getting?
Andy, where's the Pac-12 right now? I saw Governor Newsom or somebody came out. Did I read this right? Came out and said, you know, schools can play. I think I read that right. I mean, where's the Pac-12 in this?
Well, so they are revising their, you know, there's been pressure from UCLA and USC, but they're revising, obviously, you know, their groups, the number of people that can congregate together. Larry Scott has come out that he thinks that they're going to be able to play football potentially as early as the Halloween weekend. I'll tell you what I've been told also by these organizers, Dan and Seth, is that the Pac-12 schools have not been replaced in all these events. So Stanford's in Maui, as an example. They've not been replaced because the anticipation is that the Pac-12 will reverse its original decision of not playing before January 1st and play on time with the rest of the country on November 25th, save the Ivy League. The Ivy is doing its own thing. They're not coming back before January. You know, that's going to be a whole different animal of how they address it. Do Ivy League players decide to opt out for this year because they may only play a minimum of 14 games? You know, because they've got eight teams in the league, so seven times two, 14. So that'll be interesting what they do, but I'm convinced the Pac-12 will reverse course. The other thing, Dan, is, you know, like a school like UCLA, because of the state regulations, like Mick has not been able to have his guys play, you know, whereas
he had them on campus. He hasn't even met with them.
Yeah. I mean, whereas Washington, even though that once was a hotspot, Mike Hopkins has been able to have, you know, players practice. So a lot of disparities. But the thing that Cal said, I'm sure you guys have talked to him on this, and I had him on my deal a couple weeks ago, and he said, look, it's not going to be fair. But deal with it, not going to be fair. And Dan said that to me when we taped on Thursday, was that this is going to be a year, you know, where the, quote, eye test will be even more important, because the net and the, you know, all the power rankings, all that are going to be even less important, because there's going to be, it's going to be so much harder to compare teams, especially if they end up playing, you know, 3/4 of their schedule or more of just within their conference.
Andy Katz, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Great insight as usual, as usual. We're going to actually have Clint Overby on right after you, Andy, to discuss obviously the ESPN events. And like I talked to him last night, and the actual sites for sure have not been locked in, but we're going to get into that with Clint. And I also heard a rumor, and we don't have time because we've got to call Clint. The Ivy League might not even play. So my question is going to be just to the NCAA. But the Ivy League does not play. Can those players transfer second semester, be eligible to play, and then if they want to transfer back to their Ivy League school, be eligible to play immediately because the opportunity to play has been taken away from them? That will create another issue, no doubt about it. But there is a rule that the Ivy League might flat just shut it down for the year.
If I can sneak this one thing, that information that I did get, which is that in October, at the Division I Council meeting in October, that's when they will decide, and I think this will have big ramifications, if, like the fall sports, if this can be a free year for basketball. They did not decide that on Wednesday. They will decide that in October. And if that happens, obviously that could change a lot of decisions for players, especially if your league only plays, you know, 13 or 14 games. So they'll know that before the start of practice or around the time of practice, whether or not they grant that for basketball players.
All right, let's do this thing. We're welcoming in Clint Overby, the Vice President of Events for ESPN. And Clint, now that we have a starting date for college basketball, what does that mean to you?
That is a great question. It means we have a lot of scheduling to do in a short amount of time. Obviously, with the 25th coming around, you know, it takes a few weeks off the, you know, the standard basketball season. So we got to find a way to schedule a number of games in a pretty tight window. So we've got a number of people in Bristol and here in Charlotte working on a lot of grids and a lot of charts, trying to fit in as many games as possible to benefit the sport of college basketball as best we can. So it means more work, but we're excited about the opportunity.
Clint, when you, you know, we got grids and all that. Are you looking at, obviously, you're not going to make people, I don't think, travel to Maui, Battle for Atlantis, stuff like that. How important is it for not only ESPN, but important for, I think, college basketball to have Feast Week? And what's the priority there?
Well, I think, you know, I think the non-conference games have been played out time and time again, and MTEs in general play a huge role in the landscape of college basketball. So I think from coaches to administrators to, you know, obviously student athletes, I think they all value the experience because of what they represent in terms of playing teams they wouldn't otherwise play throughout the season, creating compelling matchups that the public want to see. So I think in terms of all that content and all those games, I think there's great interest in keeping them, or at least keeping some semblance of them during this time. And I get, right, the pandemic has upended everything that we perceive as normal. But the good news is, you know, there's great cooperation amongst the participating schools and the conferences to try to get in something that again, resembles what we've had in the past as best we can.
So, Clint, what's the difference between events that you guys own, all right, like say the ACC Big Ten or Orlando or Charleston, or and the events that we produce and carry on air, like Battle for Atlantis and Maui? What's the difference in terms of what you have to do? I mean, like, so for the events that you own, what's the focal point? confirming the teams that are going to be playing in the tournament, confirming the time, confirming the protocol. What goes on in like the events that ESPN owns?
Yeah, on the events that we own, Seth, is a good question. The events that we own, you know, we have the entire management structure to contend with, right? So we're booking facilities, you know, we're creating the protocols for play, we're booking the teams, we're setting the schedule with our programming department. Obviously in a normal year, we're selling tickets and sponsorships and creating, you know, opportunities for the kids to partake in while they're on site. You know, all of our events have some sort of educational or experience component that we try to infuse into all of our events. And in a normal year, we would be working on all those things at the same time. You know, on ones that we produce, obviously the great tradition of the Maui and the Atlantis and other events, those are events that have been on our air for a number of years, especially the Maui. So those are events that we obviously have great content relationships with, and they too provide great experiences for student athletes and fans. So in some ways we're all linked, but ours, we have the total control of what we have to do to make them work.
Are you, or do you, or how do you, I guess, one of the three, involved in scheduling in terms of the conference season? You know, normally we have, you know, Super Tuesday, Big Monday, that type of thing. Do you foresee that those type home games go off this year?
That's a great question. And I don't have a lot of visibility into our conference scheduling. That's others in Bristol and Charlotte who pay great attention to all those conference relationships. My key role is obviously in the non-conference and specialty events. But I know that's all part of the conversation, the mix of what's going on from a scheduling standpoint right now. And there's obviously a lot of considerations there, Dan, at this point.
You know, you said protocol. So, like, you know, first and foremost, you have, like, you, some of your events, you know, the speculation, quote unquote speculation of all the gurus is that, you know, everything's going to Orlando. Champions is going to Orlando. Orlando's staying in Orlando. Charleston's going to Orlando. You know, it's a Disney property. It common sense says it's going to Orlando. But there are some teams, and let's just use that as a saying that potentially could happen. I mean, I'm sure there are other options that are being discussed as well, but say there are teams coming from different states where there is protocol in place where that they have to quarantine and things of that nature. How are you guys going to handle those type of things in terms of destinations and protocol?
Yeah, that's something we're looking into right now. You know, any site we pick is probably going to have some degree of complication, you know, in terms of a common site where teams can come in and out of. That's just the very nature of each state's response to the pandemic. And that's not wrong. That's not right. It's just the way it is. So we're having to contend with that on multiple fronts. So any site we pick, we certainly believe there's going to be some sort of challenge with respect to getting all the teams to agree, not only to scheduling, but to protocols. And so we're obviously got a keen eye on that right now. We've got all the states listed with potential games that are teams that might be affected or impacted. And we'll just have to work through that as best we can. Again, this is one of those seasons where you can use the phrase, nothing's perfect, and have it understood, right? So we're going to do the best we can to accommodate as many needs as we can. You know, the speculation about Orlando makes all the sense in the world, right? You know, it's number one, it's a Disney property. To your point, Seth, you know, the NBA's had great success. So there is this sense of confidence in that as a venue, given the number of venues they have down there. So certainly, you know, again, I understand the speculation and I understand why that's, you know, kind of bubbled up, you know, no pun intended, in terms of people speculating about where we might be moving things or taking things, the case may be.
This is the last question. We'll let you go. I know you're really busy. You and I talked last night. I agree. We can't compare what's going on in college and call it a bubble. The NBA's bubble is a unique experience. I mean, it's totally different than what we can do. Well, you guys are calling it something else, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, for us, you know, we're calling it a common site, you know, restricted access environment, right? You know, we can't, to your point, Seth, we can't do what the NBA's done. The NBA is, you know, they've got, number one, they've got full control of their teams, you know, of the venue, of everything. And obviously, we're going to have to rely heavily on the standard testing protocols of each individual school and making sure there's a common agreement on that, and then try to implement our own standards on top of that to make sure everyone feels safe, feels like they can compete, and ultimately get a great experience out of it. So a lot of things to weigh in here, but we feel like, again, wherever we go and however we do it, we feel like we can pull it off given the resources that we have and certainly given the experts that we have with respect to Disney and ESPN.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, I know you got a lot of work to do, and we appreciate what you're doing, and we're excited about 11:25 and getting back to work and talking ball and having a little slice of normalcy in our lives. And I know how hard your staff is working to make it happen. So, Clint, I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Clint.
Likewise. Yeah, likewise, guys. Appreciate all you do for the sport. And wherever we are at, we look forward to having you both down there.
Does that mean I just got a contract extension? Was that a verbal agreement?
By the way, I see the elliptical behind it. Is that one of those things that you hang clothes on, or do we go on that thing?
Oh yeah, no. That's 15 minutes a day, because Mike Tyson.
15 minutes.
Mike Tyson. I'm doing the Mike Tyson training. He did 15 minutes a day to start, and then he went and did boxing, and he's in the best shape of his life. So if Mike Tyson does it, I'm doing it. No, I go on it every day for about an hour.
You're a beast. By the way, the dome looks really good. I'll tell you one thing. When we get back on air, when America sees that dome, they're going to go, damn, that's a handsome dome.
Seth, if we're still on the air, and I hope that we are, I got so tired of people when I walked in the gym, say, hey, Dawkins, nice back of your head. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not great. It's a catcher's mitt. So I went Seth Greenberg, Jay Billis, Michael Jordan. I saw Last Dance, and I thought, you know, Jordan's my age, handsome man. Let's shave that thing, put a little lotion on it, and see what we can do.
Make sure you have lotion on when you play golf, though. We don't want to be
have lotion. Got to have lotion.
Or a hat. All right. Well, I'll tell you one thing. That was really good stuff. Andy with great insight. Clint, obviously, a guy that's basically in the trenches making these events a reality. Good stuff right there.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Go to Spotify. Rate us as a 5. It's the world's greatest podcast. We always deliver.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.